the fans, by the fans, this is the Non-League Football Show, and I'm Tim Fuel, back with another weekly look at the world of non-league football. Did you all have a good Christmas? Some tough time for some, as we'll touch upon later, and show our hearts and thoughts. They all go out to them that are affected. It was heartwarming to see that the non-league family once again was rallying around to support our own, and long may that continue. In a similar vein, we turn this week to somebody who feels very much like one of the non-league football show family. I've certainly been probing him for sound bites for, well, nigh on 20 years now, and he's been honest, appreciative and empathetic whenever he's been on the show. And it was a pleasure to get him back on. Back on his way home from training on a Thursday night in the middle of the Christmas break for many, but not for him, having taken top spot on Boxing Day and now preparing for the return leg against title and local rivals Ebbsfleet United. Alan Dowson, manager at Dartford, has had a great first half of the season in the role down at Dartford, but he appreciates the job is far from over, and it's great to hear from him. My second guest is another non-league writer, hot on the heels of last week's visit to Trevor Nell. Stefan Appleby's book is about life as a Grizzly fan. Well, a Gresley Rovers fan who continued his faith in the club as a reformed Gresley two levels lower. And it continues now that they're Rovers once again. It's a witty set of thoughts and stories that I'm sure all non-league fans will identify with. And he's an equally engaging guest too. With another early publication deadline, New Year's Eve for this weekend's copy, John Couch is on hand to help round up the big stories in non-league this week and preview Saturday's non-league paper. Much to come then. Sit back, relax, and let's get matters underway. So whilst in many ways the National League like to lead the way with new ways of thinking, the streaming of games, the unique playoff construction, things like that, at this time of year they stick to tradition, shall we say. Local derbies are played Boxing Day and New Year as the same two clubs play each other in the space of a week or so in reverse fixtures. When those fixtures were drawn, though, back in the summer, not many would have maybe predicted a top-of-the-table clash for the festive period. But after Dartford went to Ebbsfleet on Boxing Day and took a 4-1 win away and the top spot in the National South, return match on New Year's Day is looking very appetising too. So let's find out more from old friend of the show, manager at Dartford FC, Mr. Alan Dowson. Welcome back, Alan.
Yeah, lovely to speak to you.
Yeah, it's good to get you on. I'd imagine, knowing you fairly well over all these years, you've got a decent-sized smile on your face after that Boxing Day win.
Yeah, it was a good win. It was very important. We went there, attacked the game. I've never really felt all season that we're in a championship-winning race. But I said to the lads, if you can get 6 points out of these two games, you're all in one. Because I know we've got 3 games in hand, but, you know, if we're 6 points ahead, it becomes a race. Mm. Now, I think when you go up here, these derby games, it's massive for supporters, it's massive for the club, it's massive for where we are in the league as well. So I think it's very important that we go there and tack a game, and we'll be doing exactly the same on New Year's Day. We won't change anything. I'm telling you that now. We're going to tack the game, try to get 3 points.
Yeah, you're ahead there, and you, as you say, they've got the games in hand. But as the season goes on, those games in hand, they're almost like a weight around another team's neck, aren't they?
Yeah, of course. And, you know, unfortunately, we got knocked out the FA Cup, and that wasn't a very good result, to be honest. And unfortunately, we got knocked out the trophy early. But it did have its advantages as well. You know, I remember when I was manager at work, and we were top of the league, and we had this great FA Cup run. And it sort of put a damper, like, once you finish playing against Watford on telly, for example, it sort of puts a bit of a damper on it, and it's hard to motivate again. Well, no, we've only got the league to think of, and it's the only thing that we can possibly win. So we'll be good to follow from there. So, yeah, we haven't got any fixture problems at all. We've got a small squad, but the fit squad. And, you know, we're looking forward to the rest of the season. I think we've got 21 games to go. So it's countdown time. And, you know, it's like once you get January away, February away, you're thinking there's only a couple of months left then. And it's a bit of a, you just got to stay in the mix, you know.
Yeah. It's interesting what you say about the FA Cup, because that was one of the things that I noted down. You're top, you're 3 points clear, you've played 3 more games. In the league, you seem to have clicked, you've gelled, you've got it all right. And I think you've got a 60% win ratio since you came in there in May. But it was interesting to note that you exited both FA Cup and the FA Trophy on the end of cup sets, you know, to the clubs in a lower position from you. Can you explain that? Was that just sort of one of those weird things?
It was poor, to be honest, you know. Like, it wasn't something I wanted to do. I love the FA Cup and I love the thing, but it took a while. Like, you know, I think when any manager goes to a football club, it takes a while to get the players to know you, for me to get to know them, for, you know, like, we know how a style of player want to play, an example. You know, and it takes a while. And have a compliment yet? No, not at all. But we're getting there, we are, and we're starting to believe in each other. I think one of the big things, the lads went away for a couple of years at Christmas, after, you know, we didn't play very well against Bath City, but they went away and they got together, they did, and, you know, they sorted a few things out themselves, because us managers like to think we'd sort everything out. We can't. The players have got to sort things out yourself, and I think I've got a group of lads who are quite keen to do that and quite keen to get the best out of each other. So, you know, the problem is that it's sort of like managers, you know, managers put sides out, but it's players who win things for you. So I'm not kidding myself either, you know, where, yes, I'm delighted, and yes, I could see a top league, but it is,
I mean, obviously, you came in at the end of May after, you know, the club had gone out on penalties in the playoffs. Was that difficult as well, just to pick every, not just the dressing room, not just the players that you'd taken on, but I'd imagine the whole club was, it sort of, it must shock you, must it? It puts you in, and I know from my own club, Hayes and Yedding, the start of the season sort of came around and everybody was still in a daze.
One of the lads is late to come back to pre-season. There's a different manager, and you know, a successful one before me, but I think when you successfully get promotion, I think a lot of teams in the top 10, 20 can get the playoffs, and I don't really think that's an achievement. You'll remember once when you get beaten because they hurt you. It does take a little while to get back into it, to be honest. It does take a little while to get the club back because you just miss out every year. So we're hoping this year could be a lucky year, if you like. And it's no good getting the playoffs if you're not going to win them.
Yeah, and I think you're one of the managers that's told me over the years that you create your own luck. I'd imagine, you know, we're talking late on a Thursday evening, you're still prepping. I'd imagine it's not been a quiet Christmas for you, though. It's probably been you've been able to let that one hair down at some points, I'm sure, but a busy time of year for any manager, because you're planning the next 2 or 3 months ahead.
Yeah. Well, of course, and players we need, but we're on the phone all the time to get some extra players in, because, like I said, it's a very small squad. We need to get one or two more in, but it's got to be better, or it's got to be just as good. I don't want to panic and just get 3 or 4 in who might just boost the squad but not be as good as the players I've got. So it's a tricky situation, I mean, to be honest, you know, and, how to do that and, you know, how to get the best players in. It's like anything, if you grew up a football club, you've got to give your life to it. And if it's going to be 24/7 working, that's what you've got to do. And if it's driving back now at 9:30 that night and, you know, then going again there tomorrow morning, is trying to get some players in, that's what you've got to do, you know. I mean, you know, nobody gives you anything in the game, so it's important that you work hard. And it just so happens, the harder you work, the luckier you get, you know.
And earlier on in the year, you had a few months after leaving Woking when you were just watching football. What was it like then when that first day back in the dressing room?
Oh, brilliant. It took a lot out of me. It's a working job, you know. It took a lot out of me as a person, where I was starting to get a job. I'd done it. I thought I'd done it quite well. We got the playoffs. We got promotion. We played FA Cup games. And COVID come in when it was all about survival. But, you know, now we've got a new owner and I've got, you know, investment in there, which is great. But I always knew I could manage. And then, you know, a couple of jobs come up and the Dorford one came and I went to see Tony Burnham and I thought, I tell you what, it's got potential. I've really enjoyed it. Like, you know, to be honest, 17 years of management, it's certainly been the best run club I've been at, where everything's spot on, the training facilities are there. You know, we have no problems about wages, even though we got knocked out of the cups. There's no problems about people interfering at all. They let me get on with it, they deal with me stuff. So, to be honest, you know, it's been a fresh air for me, because, like you see, after the work and it dragged us down like it would do, I got the sack. I've never had that happen to us before, and you know it just put you in a bad place sometimes. But it's just delighted to be back in football, because that's what I love doing, you know.
Oh yeah, we know that. And what's that like? You mentioned Tony Burman there, a Dartford legend as a manager, but having someone like him on the board as well, when you need to, you know, make communications to the board to maybe try and get some extra players in. What's it like having somebody like him on your side, or at least as a communication point?
Oh, no, he's brilliant. He comes in the office, we talk every day. He just wants to help. That's all. It's his club, and he's been a legend down there, and he's been a massive part of Garford Football Club. But, you know, all he wants to do is help. That's all he wants to do. He doesn't want my job, and I don't want his job, and nothing like that. We're trying to work together with the rest of my staff, and he's really good to work with. He's a proper football man. He's a likeable bloke. I think everybody, there's not many people you talk about Tony and have a crack at him. Everybody thinks a lot of him in the football world. So, in his part myself, I get him very well as a bloke. I really enjoy working with him, and just like I do with the rest of the board of directors. And, you know, it is good having a little grow between. You can put my points across on the football matter. But we get on very well, yes, and I enjoy working with him.
Yeah, It must be great to have somebody like that within the the family, I guess, at the club. I mean, people forget that you had a decent career yourself as a player, and I think it's what, something like 18 years ago since you made that move from player to player manager, and when you were at Wharton and Hersham, was coaching and managing was that always going to be a pathway for you?
Yes, definitely, because I was an average player who made the best of what I was. So you can ask any manager I played for, they'll always say, oh, yeah, I was the most hard-working player and things like that, because I loved the game, you know, but I knew I lacked ability, so I tried to make the most I possibly could out of what ability I had, and, you know, I'd done it quite well. But as a manager, it's exactly the same, you know. I'm a non-league manager at the minute, and, you know, yes, I've had promotions at all the clubs, but it's really just getting the culture around you, what you want, and you want hard workers. I think that's the minimum you should give from everybody. You want everybody to be part of it. You want, you know, us against everybody else. I always say, if you haven't got the people, you haven't got a football club, so you need a community around you as well. You need the charities around you as well. And, you know, and that's why I try, when I run clubs, you try to get everybody believing on, you're on the same wavelength, trying to achieve what we need to achieve, you know?
Yeah, and you mentioned it there. You've had promotion everywhere you've been. You got early success at Wharton. I think we runners up, I think, in the first season that you were there. And did that help? I mean, if you'd had a really crap first season, do you think you'd still be in management now?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's always in me blood, you know. And I guess, yeah, it's all its jobs. You move jobs to things. I always want to have an ambition, to be honest. I don't think anybody's done it by getting them out of Raymond South into. I've got a team out of Raymond South out into Raymond Premier. Then we've got a team out of Raymond Premier into Conference South. We've got a team out of Conference South into the National Premier. And I wouldn't mind going the full back to see if I can get a team in the Premier into the Football League. I think that's one of the ambitions coming from non-league, where sometimes people get these jobs from three leagues down and go up to a three leagues. I've always believed that, you know, it's the best way of doing it is trying to prove yourself in that league what you're in, and you know, and prove that you're best out there. You know, you've got to have an ambition that yourself and your team's the best out there, and growing from there. So I think that's all my ambitions into one. And, you know, I've always, even if I leave Dorford, where, you know, two things are going to happen eventually. I'm going to leave Dorford, or they're going to sack me. It's no eggs or eggs. That's how football works now. But whatever happens, I've always been in the game, because I've loved it since I was 7 years old, you know?
Yeah, and now you're at Dartford. It's still one of the country's most modern stadiums. You've got attendances averaging over 1,000 a week. Top of the table. Does that add extra pressure to you, though?
Never feel pressure. Never, ever. You know what I mean? Never, ever feel pressure. Excited about games, yeah. In my younger days, did I feel I'd have a sack a bit? Probably, because pride comes into it. But not now. I don't feel I have a sack. I don't feel nothing. So I never feel pressure before a game. And even when I'm in my bad times, all I do is work harder. The honest truth is, I never feel pressure anymore. I used to be early days of management. I learned not to take it with us, because if you take that baggage as well, it can do you a little bit. So I've learned never to take pressure again. So no, I don't feel under any pressure at all. That's the honest truth, you know.
So I guess managing must be easier if you're now there. At Dartford, you've got a lovely grass surface. You've got the 3G training facility. Coming into the new year, I guess when you started out as a manager at Wharton, you were worrying whether you'd get games on, whether you'd get even training on. And now you can concentrate on the football.
Of course, and I think in the younger days, and all you're doing is how good you're going to be or how bad you're going to be. And, you know, you felt different things there, a bit worries. And, you know, I made a bigger thing from being a player in the manager, and you're thinking, kind of hard on that as well, because I had to leave people out who I used to be mates with, and people who went on my stag dues as a player. I've had to, like, you know, get rid of a couple of them. And but the longer you grow, I'm not saying the easier it gets, but there's no such thing. But you learn by it, you know, you learn by mistakes. And I've got a philosophy that I might not like it, but I'll tell the truth at all times. And if I tell the truth how I think at all times, the players have got to respect that, you know, and that's how I do. And I'll rant and rave at times, or I'll be nice at times, but as long as I tell the truth, I think that's all anybody can ask. And I think that's what I try to take later years into management. But, you know, I'm still 52 and all that, you know, and I think I've got 10 more years at least to go in it, and I want to get better. The only way you get better is by working harder and getting better players in, and, you know, making better teams, and, you know, so that's the only remedy, really, you know. So, and then, but, you know, there's a lot of things going on in the world now, you know, where, you know, people are going in the recession a little bit, and there's a war going on and things like that. So I think if you're a footballer and you're getting paid for something you love doing, you should appreciate what it is, you know, and you should appreciate there's a lot. There's homeless people over Christmas, and there's things in the hospital went to see, there's children not very well. So I think being a football manager or a player, you should appreciate what you've got, and I try to appreciate what I've got every day, you know.
Yeah, and you say you never hear anyone saying a bad word against Tony Berman. I've never heard a bad word about you as well. I mean, how almost a generation now you've been a manager, sort of, you know, nearly 20 years. How's management changed in that time? Is it a whole set of different skills that you need now?
I've got these players now who call me a player. If you've got freaking 200 tattoos on the bodies and all that, you know, and stuff like that. And the agent comes to them. Now it's good early agent who tries to make a couple of quid off a player just so he can play at another team at our level. It changed, especially when it was a league up, like, you know, and these agents want to get paid a couple of grand just by getting a player from another team. And it just greed comes in. And even at our level now, agents want to get paid a bit of money to move a player on another team. And I'm thinking, what's the world come to and all that, you know. And sometimes I just think, Craigie, and, you know, everybody gets involved now, where, you know, parents get involved a little bit more, and, you know, wives and girlfriends get involved and all, and it's just a little bit, you know, I'm thinking, let the man be a man, let him play football, you know, and stuff like that. And when I was like 16, I went to Millwall at 16, I had to get on with it, and live along York Kent Road, and there's no mobile phones, there's no blinking things like that, where you had to ring the mummies and daddies up and all that. But I think I've got it all now. Players, they can stay at home until they're 35 in the generation we're at. Everybody tells how great they are. Like I say, if some of them think they're playing for Madrid. I just find that sort of thing a bit hard to take, you know.
So we're talking Thursday evening. The game's Sunday at 3 o'clock. What's the routine with the players from here on in, given, you know, it's just a handful of hours after New Year's Eve? I mean, I'd imagine when you were their age, you were probably out on New Year's Eve, weren't you?
No, I've never gone before a game. I've done a game all day long, but never before. And all that, you know. And I said to them, you know, like, and they've looked after themselves and they send little things in. So from now on in, we want to know what they're doing. Have they done any more running, you know, stuff like that. You know, you bring a breathalyzer in on New Year's Day, you will just threaten them to say, listen, if I think anybody's had a drink here, I'll just not play them. It's too important. There's going to be 3,500, 4,000 people there in a local derby, and you want to have a drink. Why not win the game and have a drink on New Year's Day? And no matter, you know.
It is all about educating them, is it? And Alan, we've already taken up far too much of your time, but it's always about education with you. I love talking to you. I could probably be there for days on end, and you keep talking. But best of luck at the weekend. Thanks for joining us on the Non-League Football Show, and we'll speak to you again soon.
Yeah, pleasure. Make sure you come down to the game sometime, you know. We are brilliant.
Now, last week, I spoke with Trevor Nell about his football writing, all about non-league, and having begun reading my next guest book this week, I thought it perfect timing to get him on to a book about a decade in his life as a Gresley FC, Gresley Rovers fan. There's something that every non-league fan will recognise at every turn of the page. It's not a Gresley book, it's a football book. It's a book about the true football that we all love at this level. It's got humour, it's got peaks and troughs. It's all about life and how non-league gets us through. And let's give a warm welcome to the author of What I Talk About When I Talk About Non-League Football, Mr. Stefan Appleby. Welcome to the show, Stefan.
Tim, an absolute pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
And I'll be honest, Stefan, your family and work commitments mean, as much as it's a great read, I haven't quite finished it yet, but it really is the spirit of every non-league fan, particularly at this time of year. It's got a Gresley hint, but I think it's a book for everybody, whether you're a non-league fan or not. But if you're a non-league fan, you'll recognise stuff in it.
I'd like to think so, yeah. I mean, obviously, whenever you speak to authors, and I'm sure they're all pretty much of a muchness, everybody kind of has to write to some extent about what they know and centre it around that. And what I know is Gresley Rovers or Gresley FC, as it was for 10 years back there, for 2008, for 10, 11 years, something like that, give or take, anyway. And so, yeah, it certainly centres around that club, because I've been watching them for the best part of 25, 30 years now. they've been with me through thick and thin, as you'll see in the book or read in the book. And yeah, it's an experience that, sorry, it's about the experiences with the club, but it's all the things that are around that as well. And it's the fact that, you know, when Saturday comes, I guess, is the cliche, but, you know, it's there. And in between that, you've got the family, you've got your life, you've got your job, you've got your school, you've got whatever it might be in between that. All of those other things happen, and I don't think we should ignore those. And how those two intertwine, I think, is quite not important, but it's interesting to look at, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Grizzly is the heartbeat, and not only for the book, but for you too. As you said, your hometown club. So was there ever any other club in your life?
I had a really weird... from out of nowhere, so who don't know, Gresley Rovers play in a village called Church Gresley, which is in the kind of the bottom tip of Derbyshire, right in the middle of the country there, kind of not far from Burton-on-Trent, I guess, geographically. So for a really brief period, there was a small spot in my heart for Leeds for some weird reason. When I was growing up, I don't know whether I genuinely can't put my finger on why. But from the moment I clapped eyes on the moat ground, which our house kind of overlooked, I was smitten, really, kind of looking at the floodlights shining down on those Tuesday night games. And I could only see kind of about eighth of the pitch, but I was intoxicated by what I could see, but also what I couldn't. So getting around there, and once I got in there, I was like, wow, okay, this really is for me. And wherever I've gone, I've tried to... where I've moved up and down the country over the intervening years, I've tried to look at and watch and follow the local team, whoever that may be. But Gresley are always my club. They're always who I go back to. It's the first result I look out for. They're the one I care about, you know. That's my true love.
Once a club's in your life, especially at non-league, as you sort of intimated, it plays so many roles in your life, doesn't it? I mean, this is your first book as well. You're a first-time author. How did the book come about?
So it all, if you cast your mind back to kind of March 2020, and we all just entered lockdown, and there were a lot of people going, you know, obviously we couldn't go anywhere. We could go literally anywhere. We could go to the supermarket, and that was about it, wasn't it? And so I had some spare time on my hands, and I fetched down... one of those things I wonder why I kept them, but now I'm very glad I did. But I fetched down all of the old programmes I'd got from various years watching the club home and away, and kind of put them into some sort of, well, season order, so I could see where I'd been each year and which towns we'd visited, who we'd played, what happened, and follow the stories that way. And over time, I thought, well, actually, there's a little narrative starting to form here of each of these years. And because the club underwent that, you know, when we went bust, we were Gresley FC, famous old club, and then went bust in 2008 and reformed as Gresley FC. And it's always disappointing when one loses the original name of a club, as you'll be aware. But it gave an opportunity, I think, to look back, especially now, we've reclaimed that name and once more back to being called Rovers, that there was a distinct period at which this club that I have always supported, always played in the same place, always wearing the same colours, you know, always, it is what it is. There's a distinct period where they were called something different, and it kind of went, well, okay, what happened for those 10 years? Where were we? Did we go up? Did we go down? Did we lose? Did we win? How did all that play out? And in the middle of that, I was starting to think, well, actually, those, if we neatly encapsulate it as a decade, bit of poetic license, I'll be honest, but let's call it a decade, that ties in with me going from a kind of relatively immature 30-year-old.
I think that's what I loved. I could see me as well and many other of my friends. How, as we grow up with non-league, don't we? We literally grow up and you know, maybe yes, become better people for being involved in non-league as well, I think.
I'd like to think so, yeah. It's certainly true for some of us. I'll agree with that, I think, yeah, definitely. It's certainly, yeah, the maturity curve has been, I think it's been helped by going to non-league football. It helped me in a weird way, without being too big about it, it helped me understand how to speak to people properly. You know what I mean? Like, how to have conversations with strangers, how to be polite to the people who run the, you know, the canteen or the bar or the turnstiles or the, you know, and understand that the heart of a beating community is the people there within. And I think that's really, really important. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's always a conversation starter for me. If there's a non-league element, then suddenly you've got my attention. But yeah, that element as well. Yeah, I do some teaching. I've got my own kids. And I say to them, it doesn't matter what qualifications you've got. If you can't talk to people, you're not going to get anywhere. And that little icebreaker, that non-league, just gives you that little bit of an edge. I think that's a very important lesson. If we learn anything today from this podcast, it's get out to your local non-league club and go and speak to people. What about milestone markers in your life as well? Are you one of those fans who remembers those big events in your life by games or season performances of Gresley alongside them?
To some extent. I'd hesitate to say it kind of neatly aligns with that kind of Nick Hornby-esque fever pitch kind of that kind of narrative. But there are certainly, that's when I started, when I go back to thinking about how I originally started the book and looking at those individual seasons, they really, really did tally with, broadly speaking, the ups and downs of me as a human over those 10 years. So yeah, broadly getting more mature, but going from 30 to 40, I think my journey, I don't think is particularly, out of the ordinary. I got married. I moved into a bigger house. I got a better job. I got a promotion. So all of the really, really good bits. And you can kind of tally those alongside with the fact that in 2014-15, so when I proposed to my wife and then indeed got married, if we're doing it by season, so when I proposed and then I got married, those 2 years for Gresley were particularly good. We went on a really, really good cup run and we made the playoffs for the first time in a long time in the Unibond League. And so we had a really, really good time as a club. And it's kind of, they intertwine really nicely because my stag do, and I think there are many people, I'd love to be proven wrong, so please, on your behalf, Tim, I invite people to get in touch indeed with you and tell you if they have, but I don't think there are many people who've been on a stag do to Stafford Rangers. And if there are, I hope they enjoy themselves as much as we did. It was magic. But it's things like that. They those good bits really, really tie together and really, you're right, they do reflect on each other really, really well. And the other side of it, of course, is the negatives. You know, there are bad moments when you're watching a football club, you know, the ups and the downs, the relegations, the thunderous defeats to local rivals, all of those things we all know so well, those painful moments. For me, they tallied with the bad moments of those 10 years as well. I was made redundant at one point and lost my job. And I won't go into too much detail and spoiler what's in the book for those reading. But you'll see, I think there is a neat little, and I don't think I've had to force it particularly hard as well, to be honest, but there is a neat little kind of intertwining of the good and bad. I think it really does reflect that.
Yeah, and there is humour in it as well. It's a good read. It sort of pulls you along as well. I suppose there had to be because, you know, those periods, as you've explained, there were some highs and some lows. I mean, in true non-league form, there was promotions, relegations, VARs runs without a win. I've got noted down there. I talk about Hollywood storylines in non-league week in, week out. They're saying that Hollywood should just look at non-league and just, you know, there's blockbusters being made, Oscar winners every week. But your book shows all those ups and downs, the twists and turns and the joys of being a non-league supporter as well. I love the fact that without non-league, you might not have found Bothwell.
it's absolutely true. Bothwell and I may never have become acquainted were it not for the beauty of the terraces somewhere in Yorkshire. But yeah, it's absolutely that. You're right. And I mean, the reason, it was a kind of conscious choice to make it funny and humorous, because actually, even with the downside, there are always, and everybody will know these, anybody who's ever followed any non-league club and been absolutely anywhere will have met the wag on the terraces, you know, the humorous guy in the pub before or after or in the club bar or wherever it may be, or, you know, some humorous moment over the tannoy or whatever it might be. There's always something funny. And it's those moments that did I walk away from a lot of towns when I watched Gresley, you know, a lot of times going, that was brilliant. Remember that fella there who did that or said that, or, you know, that one line had absolutely floored me, or that really grumpy fella I met in Bridlington. God, I wonder how miserable that fella is right now. And I love things like that. Even the bits where you're like, God, he's miserable. You walk away going, well, my life's amazing, so I'm glad I'm not him. So, yeah, great.
And I love the fact that the foreword is by a former player, a manager. I think he's now on the board as well at Gresley. Yeah. And Gary, it's all about how almost his life, sort of, it was a series of connections, and then suddenly he got a club that grabbed him, and that's why he's there, and that's why you're there. It's why we're all involved in our clubs.
Yeah, it's that kind of, many of us, it's pure chance where we were born, who our dad supported, whatever the reason is, it's pure chance that we'll be a Gresley fan or a Hayes and Yedding fan or a Hendon fan or a Worcester City, whoever it is, it's not important. It's all pure chance, really. But yeah, the same with Gaz Norton. Like, you know, I really wanted Gaz to be involved. Like, Gary Norton's been involved with Gresley since the mid-90s, for a long time, basically. And I think while the book is obviously written by me, it's my journey, it's me following that club, it is about the club and having that kind of authentic voice, if you like, saying, look, here's my journey as a standard. And he admits himself, he said, look, I wasn't the greatest footballer you've ever seen in your life. He was a no-nonsense kind of big number five at the back, Gary Norton, but a lovely bloke. He said himself, lack talent, but, you know, really, really wanted to do it. Gresley found me, and I am Gresley. I've been Gresley from the reserves right the way through, and here he is now, kind of, you know, I was there. Oh, was it last season? I'm trying to think. About last season now, with floodlights went just before on a Tuesday night, just before a game. And I was sitting in the clubhouse having a pint. Everything went dark. And I'm like, this is, you know, 7:15. So I'm thinking, well, this isn't good, is it? 7:15, Tuesday night, what's happened? And first, everyone just goes, well, everyone kind of stoically carried on drinking and didn't really mention it, to be honest. But the first moment of kind of excitement, or like somebody sorting this out, was Gary Norton, the kind of director of the football club, coming in going, Harry, where's the fuse box? Which is just a magnificent, like, little snapshot into what non-league life is. Like, this fella's the top of the football club, and here he is trying to find the fuse box at 7:15 on a Tuesday night while we all sup a very quiet lager.
I feel his pain having experienced exactly the same earlier on in the season. But again, we got the game on. And I love the fact as well that over the years you've tried to drag friends along with you wherever you've been, and sort of and we all have friends who rib you a bit about that fascination with non-league. But I'm just wondering whether any of those, maybe reading the book out of loyalty, have perhaps, you know, maybe seen the light and asked to tag along to the next Gresley game with you.
Do you know what? Nobody's asked to tag along to the next Gresley game with me as yet. But this very morning, I had a message through social media from a fella who follows non-league football in Madrid. I have to confess, my knowledge of the Spanish non-league football scene is pretty minimal.
I'll put my hands up there as well.
But he just sent me a message one saying, really, really enjoying the book, really funny. Next time you're in Madrid and want to check some non-league football out, give me a shout. So I have an invitation to go to Spain, if nothing else. So I'll take that.
Well, maybe my next question was going to be, I've mentioned it's your first book. I guess it was enjoyable. You're responding to people like myself. Can we expect a follow-up? Is that maybe Madrid? I don't know.
Oh, do you know what? I hesitate to play to the crowd, but, you know, if there's enough of a groundswell of support and a desire for it, absolutely, I'd love to. But yeah, it's what I will say is this first book is 10 years in the life of the club, so I need to find something with a slightly shorter time span for my next book.
Well, what about this season for Gresley? Yeah, promotion back in step four. Not a great season so far, but a great Boxing Day win.
Yeah, Boxing Day win over the local rival Shepshed, which is really, really good. And nearly getting 500 through the door as well, which is always nice to see. It's been a really tricky first half of the season, wouldn't you? We've we lost the team that went up last year. Lost kind of a couple of the big big stars up front from that team, and so I think it's taken a while to find replacements that work and that gel and kind of fit it all together and get those pieces working. But you know, I think the management team we've got in place in Paul Abbott and Tomlinson are doing a really good job, and I've got real faith in what they're doing. I believe them; they're passionate about it. They seem to get the best out of the players that they're putting out there week in, week out. And you know, if we can stay up this year, I said at the start of this season myself, is if we stay up this year, that'll be a win, because the plan is for us to move to a new ground at some point over the next 12 to 18 months, which is, you know, is many non-league clubs plans, but we've got various different levels of permission, which I won't pretend to understand. I'm not a planning inspector or anything associated with. But if we can stay in that league and then move to that new ground, that's a win. Stay in step four, and then we can kind of really build on that. And that'd be a real win for us.
It sounds great, and never dampen those plans. I still recall tales of first meeting Danny Hunter, the chairman at Boreham Wood, 20-odd years ago. It was Boreham Wood against Yedding. There was probably about 80 people in the crowd, and he had these big drawings up on the wall about what he was going to do with his football club. He was going to build this academy, college, and all that sort of thing. And like many other people, we'd seen similar plans, but he certainly brought them to fruition and sort of sometimes you just need that extra passion, and I think that flows in non-league, doesn't it? It flows in your book for sure. Where can people get hold of a copy of the book, Stefan?
So it's called What I Talk About When I Talk About Non-League Football, and it is available from Amazon.com in both paperback or Kindle format, so you can order it online through there. You can also get it via the Gresley Rovers website, so that there's a link there that'll take you through to be able to buy it. Or indeed, if you happen to be at the Moat Ground at any point, there are copies on sale in the club shop and behind the bar there.
Well, hopefully it's put Gresley back on the map. As I say, I've not quite finished it. Hopefully I will by the end of the day, even if I don't get this next interview organised. I've got a little bit of time. I'll try and get it finished. But Stefan Appleby, it's been brilliant to talk to you. Hopefully we will stay in touch and we'll follow the progress of Gresley and look forward to, well, the next chapter in your writing career. Thanks for joining us on the Non-League Football Show.
Thanks so much, Tim. Appreciate your time.
Time then to head on over to Non-League Paper Towers, and welcome back to the Non-League Show. Executive Editor at the Non-League Paper, Mr. John Couch. Welcome back, John.
Thank you, Tim. How are you?
Yeah, good. I wouldn't say I'm Christmas refreshed, but I'm certainly looking forward to another weekend packed full of games coming left, right, and centre. Hopefully, if I hear the heavens are about to open up again and the rain and deluge is going to maybe affect the calendar again, but another slight change due to Christmas again this week. Is it New Year's Eve for your copy of this week's non-league paper?
That's right, yes. We're going to press tonight stroke first thing tomorrow morning. That's on the Friday to come out on Saturday. So we'll be outside. So unfortunately, we haven't been able to get the New Year's Day gamers in. But obviously, we'll be rounding them up next week. The only two games you get in are the two games in National League South, we were playing tonight, and that's at Bath and Braintree. So they get the extra special treatment this week. But the rest, unfortunately, we've had to round up because Christmas hasn't fallen on great days for us this year. But such is life. You know, every 7 years it happens. We've had to fill a lot of new space with news and features, and we like to think we've done a good job. It's been a bit tough. We've got the Lurgy doing the rounds at Non-League Paper Towers this week, so we've had to dig in a little bit deeper. But yeah, we think we're nearly there.
And that's good to hear. And it's always a great read, whatever. But as I said, there are games coming thick and fast. It's all pretty much. If you wanted to go to a game, I think, other than Christmas Day, you probably could have found a game somewhere in the country to go and watch.
That's right. I mean, it's plenty of games. I mean, we're We were doing the fixtures. We had given the fixtures extra room this week. You know, there's been matches pretty much every day throughout. I mean, there was a even a game I saw at Christmas Eve at Willand Rovers, and we won a little piece with Willand last week. They obviously decided to go with down the Christmas Eve route, and I think it went down quite well actually. Good luck to them, and it's literally been games every day. It's been plenty to get our teeth into. Boxing Day was great. There was a really, really good handful of games on Boxing Day at all levels, and it'll be the same again this weekend, New Year's Day. It's really good National League action, and then another big full calendar again on Monday. So it's all go.
Yeah, it does seem that this year's gone quick, but it seems that it's almost teed up a perfect start to the new year with all the games that are set to come. And looking at, you know, across the divisions, there's not many points between top and bottom across the pyramid.
That's right. I mean, we were just doing our roundup, and it gives us an opportunity to sort of look down the league. You know, stories and teams that you may have sort of overlooked somewhat. And it really is. There's some really tasty. Talent battles at the top and the bottom of near enough every league. You only have to look at the National League. You know, the top two or three in the National League. That's going to go right down to the wire. Certainly with Notts County and Wrexham, there don't seem to be any let up there. And as I say, if you look right down the pyramid, it's exactly the same. There's some really, really tasty battles to look forward to in 2023.
Yeah, and you know, football is why we all come together. There was some very distressing news from non-league making the national headlines this week with the death of Stratford Town's Cody Fisher at a nightclub on Boxing Day. Large-scale police investigations underway, and all we can really do is offer our condolences to Cody's family and friends at this very sad time. But it just puts non-league into perspective again.
Yeah, it certainly does. It's a horrible, horrible story. We've had a lot of, you know, we've been looking into it sort of quite deeply with help from my friends in the Midlands. And Cody was someone who was well known to a lot of football clubs in that area, having played for the likes of Stourbridge, Tamworth, Bromsgrove, and now Stratford. Went to a nightclub with his football club mates. And tragedy like that strikes. It just can't happen. And it can. It's just a horrible situation. But obviously for Cody's family and his friends, and you know everyone really at Stratford Town. I mean, there's been no official confirmation as to what's going to happen with that game against Bromsgrove. It's going to be one difficult game for those guys to be playing in. It's a horrible situation, and you know, it's one that you would never.
Yeah, as a journalist, it's one of those. It's one of those things that sometimes you don't. It's not as exciting as a job and as pleasing a job as talking about people winning trophies and that sort of thing. It is about retelling the stories and just trying to make sure that the facts are out there as well, isn't it? That, I mean, that's the important thing. I mean that story does again refocus your mind on the lucky position I guess we find ourselves in, being able to think about enjoying football again this weekend. Those sliding door moments in life, I guess, something I always refer to. And also on Boxing Day, brought that home with the return to Twerton Park of Bath City's Alex Fletcher. Yeah, he only walked onto the field to take the applause from the crowd, but just a few weeks ago, that seemed that might never be possible.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, every now and again, it's the nature of the beast, really. Every now and again, there's a story that you know, really puts things into perspective. Alex Fletcher was certainly one of them. Cody Fisher now is another, and sadly, these days. There seem to be too many of them. But as I said, it is the nature of the beast. It's part of sort of what we do. It's not a very nice situation to be in when you're having to make calls to people who don't want to talk to you. You know, and rightly so. It's something you sort of have to get used to, sort of being told where to go every now and again. I mean, obviously, not quite so much in this job, but certainly as a news reporter many years ago, that was something that I had to do. No one wanted a nosy journalist sniffing around, and fortunately for me, it's not quite like that anymore. Reporting on non-league football, it's not quite as brutal as that anymore. But yeah, unfortunately, you still have to tell these stories, but it just goes to show just how much positivity there is around each club. I mean, there's been a lot of the tributes that are coming for Cody, and the tributes are coming for Alex. But these last couple of months have been unbelievable. All over the country, clubs at all levels, and everyone is united. And you know, especially in Alex's situation, you know, with the talk about, you know, it's about time that we did something about surround in ground. You know, it's something that you know, the clubs all take on board together, and that they've united, and it's that special bond that that does keep non-league football sort of warm, really, with supporters and player fans and players alike. But it's a tragic situation, obviously.
Yeah, and I mean, it is that non-league family. We say non-league family, and I mean that extends beyond the players and the people that are involved in the clubs as well. Because we also said on Tuesday, and if you saw the Wessex League derby between Laverstock and Ford and Bremerton Heath Harlequins, abandoned after only 26 minutes when the assistant referee collapsed in front of the dugouts. And thankfully, some quick thinking actions by the medical support staff, which from both clubs, which again, something that's changed in recent years. You know, these people are so on it. Those support staff, the ambulance professionals that got into the hospital quickly, and his recovery's beginning. It is a beautiful game, non-league, but however strongly you support your club, life is a thing to be cherished more, isn't it?
Oh, very, very much. I mean, that story just about sums it up. The situation. The situation with the Bromley supporter the other week as well. Yeovil, I mean, it was, you know, football very, very quickly become immaterial, and you know, it was humanity that was always going to naturally take over, and you know, did that day. And thankfully, you know, with the situation in the Wessex League as well, with the assistant referee, that's the same. And you know, that's why I think personally, non-league football is very, very special, because you know, everyone does come together, and you know, we all realise that it is only a game, and very fortunate to be in this position to report on the game that I love, but it is only a game. And you know, the situations like we've seen this week really does put things into perspective.
Yeah, indeed. It is only a game. But that's not to say we won't all get very excited. Some people overexcited about the next round of games this weekend. Of course, as they fixtures coming thick and fast. I'm looking at the Northern Premier Division 1 Midlands. Seemingly unstoppable second place, Spalding United, travelling to windless Yaxley. I mean, almost the journalist in me wants to write the headlines, you know, and already before the games even play. There'll be passion there from both sides and all the supporters. Yeah, there's, what, thousands of games up and down the land this weekend. It is the magic of non-league as well, that there are these games being played that make such a difference to people's lives.
That's right. I mean, we've seen on Boxing Day, there's been a few surprise results. Mm-hmm. And Concert and Stockton was one. Was certainly one that sprung to mind. And you know, big derby affairs, obviously, at this time of year, and you know, there's been some excellent crowds, and people have really embraced it, and yeah, there's been shocks up and down the country. It's been great to see. I mean, you would never predict anything on a Boxing Day. Derby affairs are always very, very tight. They're always very, very passionate, and I've been reading about many over the last few days that have really produced a big spectacle. And and as I say, the crowds have been fantastic. You know, we've been 4,600, I think, at Aldershot against Woking. That was a bit of a tasty affair, probably too tasty, I think, for Aldershot and Woking fans liking. But it is the passion of the game, and this time of year really brings out the best, I think, in supporters.
Yeah, and you mentioned earlier the National League. Yeah, there's two at the top. Winning 4-1 over Oldham on Boxing Day. Wrexham 5-0 against Solihull, and then we've got the reverse rematches coming up Sunday and Monday, respectively. I mean, the goals going in the National League at the top of the table is something we spoke about weeks and weeks and weeks ago, and it hasn't stopped.
No, that's right. Especially the top two. Notts County and Wrexham are just banging them in for fun, aren't they? And they're going at it hammer and tongs, and they're going to take some catching, them too. I mean, Chesterfield managed to find a way back to winning ways, but there's just no stopping those two. And, Macaulay Langstaff is 21 goals for the season. He's out with an injury, so they bring in Kevin Scott, and next thing you know, he scores two, and Notts County score another four in the first half. You know, that just shows how clinical they are and how much depth they've got. You look at Wrexham. You know, Paul Wallen's been a bit quiet recently, and then he pops up with a hat trick. You know, against a very good Solihull side. So I mean, those two really are raising the bar to new levels. But it's going to be fascinating for the second game, I think, between those two. I'm not quite sure where it is, whether it's at Notts County or Wrexham, but whatever that's going to be, a very, very big game. And I think we could be looking at record crowds and everything else for that particular game. I think that's going to be a cracker.
Yeah, exciting calendars up and down the pyramid. There was just one managerial casualty that I spotted. Andy Drury losing his job at Margate on Boxing Day. A 3-0 home defeat to playoff chasing Craig Wanderers. The final straw, it seemed, as they slipped nearer the drop in the Isthmian Premier. It's a tough division, as they all are at the moment.
Yeah, Isthmian Premier has always been a very tough division. Margate are always one of those teams who are going to be there or thereabouts. It's not quite happened for them this year, so they obviously feel it's time for them to make a change. And I hope it won't work for Margate, because they've been knocking on the door for so many years. They just can't get to that next level. But it's a big club. It's a sleeping giant as such, really. Down in the southeast, and hopefully they can get it right and get back to where they belong, which is second tier, really, in my eyes. As I say, I've been watching Margate over many years, and lovely club, lovely people, and hopefully they'll get it right.
Yeah, and as I said, we've got an early New Year's Eve edition of the non-league paper. Anything else in particular that we can expect to read about this weekend?
Plenty of sort of looking back, really, to the week. Obviously, the news that we've touched upon. We've got a nice feature on Gavin Rose, the former Dulwich Hamlet manager, who's sort of looking to get back in the hot seat. And what a 13 years he had at Dulwich Hamlet. So that's one thing we're looking at. And talking of comebacks, we've also got a nice little interview with Jefferson Louis, who I think many of you will probably know. I think 41 clubs. I think now.
I've signed Jefferson 3 or 4 times for my own club.
Yeah, he's back where it all started at Tame United, and still bagging him in for fun. So he's a real character, and we got a nice picture of him as well. We've also got our New Year's quiz. Tested knowledge on all things new year, and we've got. Adam Virgo as well from BT, telling us about his half-time analysis, we say, half-season analysis and what he thinks will happen in the second half of the season. So, yeah, still plenty to go out and buy the paper for. Hopefully if you enjoy your games and with us again next week, we'll be doing our best to wrap it all up again for you.
And for all those that were worried what they were going to do with an early finish maybe from work on New Year's Eve, you can read your non-league paper early. Fantastic. John Couch, always a pleasure to get you on. Happy New Year, and we look forward to speaking to you in 2023.
Take care. Thanks, Tim.
And that's it for this week. Thank you, as ever, to all of my guests. Thank you also to everybody for listening. Remember, you can, of course, follow us throughout the season and join in throughout the week on social media at Non-League Show. Myself there at Tim Fuel, FUELL. And you can find us every week on Audio Boom, on Apple Podcasts, but also Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Deezer, TuneIn Radio, CastBox, iHeart, JS7, Listen Notes, Overcast, Podcast Addict, Podchaser, Radio Republic, via your smart speakers and all good podcast aggregation sites. Stay safe, enjoy your football, Happy New Year, thank you and goodbye.
JIBBA JABBA Production. JIBBA JABBA.